Now, I'm not saying that I would want to be a jihadist, but if I did want to be a jihadist, I'd probably be launching mortars the same way, just sitting down with my legs crossed, having a freaking fabulous time. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. What the hell is going on over inside Gaza? Seriously, we've got, looks like the French that are calling for an end to GHF. They're accusing GHF of instigating the famine over there. U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, along with U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee, both flew into Gaza today to one of the GHF sites to go learn what's actually taking place on the ground. Put out some brand new information. At the same time, it looks like Iran, and I can't make this up, is actually demanding, I mean, might as well call them reparations from the United States for bombing them and taking out their uranium enrichment plants before they will come back to the negotiating table on the nuke talks. Yep. Imagine that. Also looks like they're trying to acquire some brand new weapons from China. We're going to go over that a heck of a lot more in today's episode. So I hope you guys are strapped in. I hope you're ready. Man, look at that, man. Before I even get going, what do we got? John Wilson, 19 months, buddy. Michael Veter coming in, gifting out 10 Speak the Truth memberships. And John Wilson dropping an additional 20 Speak the Truth memberships. Ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have your gifts turned on, I don't know what's wrong with you. People gift out memberships here left and right like it's going out of style. First, before we even get into that, I got to talk to you guys about Ram Breslovsky, 21-year-old Israeli soldier. He's kidnapped on October 7th and taken into Gaza. And he has been there ever since. Yesterday, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad ended up releasing this video of him. Now, we're not going to play the entire video, but he's crying and saying that you want to see evidence of starvation in Gaza? Before we get into this, here's evidence of starvation in Gaza. This man has been sitting there for almost 2 years now, and he is just in pain throughout this entire video. These are just a couple screen grabs of that video to show you guys what he's dealing with. That dude, and look at the back of his neck here. You can see these different marks on him, and I'm sure. Look at his legs. You guys can see the different scars. Like, it's pretty clear that this guy has been tortured. He's got bruises all over his body. He's got zero meat on his bones whatsoever. He just looks like absolute, like he's been treated like absolute trash. And yet, not a peep from the French about this. The French are going to sit there and tell you that there's famine in Gaza and so on and so forth. It's funny, all of his captors seem to be very, very well fed. Tom Bones says, I was taking my morning poop while watching your poop videos from last night. I flushed at a new fountain, pooped up in Russia. Nice to know I'm doing my part. Yeah, for those of you that didn't know, last night we had a little bit of a different broadcast. I highly suggest you go back and take a look at it. We wanted something a little bit different last night. We wanted to take a break. So I featured all of the Russian poop fountains, and I don't want to get into that. Maybe I'll get into it at the end of the show, but some weird stuff coming out from there. Ricky says, I don't see the propaganda live, but my wife had to deal with me laughing nonstop in bed last night. Yeah, man, that was my favorite live session I think I've done today. Incog Faraday says, I have to say the modern art poopsicle was my favorite. Somebody called them stalagmites and I died laughing. Somebody in the comment section over on X actually called them stalagmites and I couldn't stop laughing myself. This is coming from Al Arabia English, right? GHF aid system in Gaza is a scandal and shameful, says the French foreign minister. Now, I could have used any other news organization to be perfectly honest with you, bring this story up, but I figured why not showcase Al Arabia English? Because at the end of the day, they are the ones that are publishing France's crap. France foreign minister said on Tuesday, a U.S. and Israeli-backed aid system in Gaza had generated a bloodbath and had to cease activity. I want to call for the cessation of activities of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, the militarized distribution of humanitarian aid that has generated a bloodbath in distribution lines in Gaza, which is a scandal, which is shameful and has to stop. Well, I'm going to actually prove to you guys today that that's wrong. Yesterday, I dumped a video, and I highly suggest you guys go over and watch it if you haven't seen it yet. It actually talks about the amount of humanitarian aid that's being distributed by GHF inside of Gaza, or the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Now, the only other organization that's actually distributing humanitarian aid in Gaza is the UN's World Food Program. GHF not only is delivering more meals to the Palestinians, they're transporting more food into Gaza, GHF is transporting more food into Gaza than the World Food Program. But additionally, none of their food is getting stolen and or looted. On the flip side, according to the UN, the World Food Program loses 92%+ of all of the humanitarian aid that they end up picking up from the distribution points. So when I look at this and they start telling me that it's turned into a bloodbath, well, I know I've shown you guys the videos of the HA getting stolen over the last couple of days. I'm about to show you some pictures of what I believe to be a World Food Program truck after it ends up getting hijacked and looted and robbed. Now, the Gazans that are featured on these images are presumably sleeping. All right. They decided that they were too tired from looting the humanitarian aid trucks and decided that they needed a nap. And when they noticed that they passed out from all of the starvation and everything that they had, you can see that their buddies had to come over and drag them off of the vehicles. Now, that's my layman's assumption of what took place. Is it possible that they could be dead? I'm sure. But if you believe that to be true, then you have to ask yourself, how is it they ended up getting killed while picking up humanitarian aid and looting it from the World Food Program? Because the Israeli Defense Force, yeah, it's not allowed anywhere near the World Food Program's trucks. They've actually refused to allow the IDF to provide security for their vehicles. Thus, 92% of them are getting looted and getting stolen. I did the math today, and the math on it is kind of troubling. B Hunter coming in, giving out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. I did the math on it. The math within itself is kind of troubling. And when I say it's kind of troubling, I mean it is quite troubling when we look at the numbers. Do you realize that with all of that looting, the World Food Program, the UN's United Nations World Food Program, delivers less than 0.1 meals per Palestinian a day? Say that again. The UN's World Food Program delivers less than 0.1 meals per Palestinian per day. GHF, on the other hand, delivers 655% more meals to the Palestinians in Gaza than the World Food Program. Those are the simple facts and the simple numbers. And so when I see people like, I don't know, the French foreign minister that's claiming that this needs to be dismantled, it kind of makes me wonder what the French foreign minister is up to and why. Mark Blue becoming a true supporter. Thank you, sir. Greatly appreciate that. Thank you. B Hunter coming in, giving out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. So that's the situation with the French on the ground. I don't know how they go about claiming that or even coming anywhere near. But yeah, France accused GHF of bloodshed. I mean, it's absolutely nuts because GHF is quite literally doing a good job. And these are everywhere. You can find that information kind of wherever you want to go. But don't worry, because France to the rescue, they decided to come in and deliver humanitarian aid drops. AP Payne coming in, gifting out 10 Speak the Truth memberships. Anybody count those bundles in that drop? I didn't. Let's go back. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 bundles. Good job, France. You delivered 4 bundles. We're really proud of you, man. Good freaking job. You guys were able to knock out 4 freaking bundles to the 2.1 million people inside of Gaza. Well done, France. You guys are crushing it out there. I'm sure you guys just delivered more meals than GHF did. It's freaking shocking, isn't it? In addition to that, there's other articles that are coming out, such as this one. This is the New York Times opinion. It says Netanyahu is choosing to starve Gaza. Now, if you guys want, this article is over behind a paywall, so I don't think I can actually disclose it and read it to you. But it says, and again, it's an op-ed to be clear, and it's not like we haven't debunked any other New York Times op-eds in the past on this channel. Now, have we? It says there's an urgent moral crisis. That famine thresholds have been crossed, meaning that multiple people have died. Now, where do you think they get those numbers from? Well, I checked. Those numbers come from the Gaza Ministry of Health, where last month in June, they claimed that over 1,000 Palestinians have died from starvation. I'll say that again. They claim that over 1,000 Palestinians have died from starvation. They say that Israel is using starvation as a collective punishment, and that the allies must leverage their influence over Israel, criticizing the United States. And they're also calling for an immediate ceasefire and neutral aid routes. Now, What this op-ed failed to tell everybody is that Israel has done its best to secure the humanitarian aid routes. They actually shut down operations one time a day in order to do so. But the World Food Program refuses to allow Israel to escort their convoys. So it just never works out for them. And because of that, they're essentially posted up in random places. Now, I know you guys might be saying, Matt, that's nuts. They need to bring in more humanitarian aid. Here you go.
I'm here at the Gaza border at the Kerem Shalom crossing. Right now we're on the Israeli side. In just a few moments, we're going to be crossing into Gaza. I'm going to give you an inside look at what's happening at the depot where hundreds of trucks of humanitarian aid are entering the Gaza Strip every month in order to be distributed. I'm here in the Gaza Strip and I'm at the distribution center where thousands of pallets of aids are just waiting to be distributed. Let's take a closer look at what's happening here. Walking around this area, I think it's incredibly frustrating that we're seeing the accusations that we're seeing right here from the UN, accusing Israel of intentional starvation, all kinds of crimes against humanity that are simply not the case when you actually look at the facts on the ground. Now, is there suffering in Gaza? Of course. Are there pockets of hunger? Absolutely. Which is why you see this distribution center with thousands of pallets of aid just waiting to be delivered. This is literally, as far as the eye can see, you see humanitarian aid waiting for distribution. Even on the way into the Gaza Strip, we saw that there was a long line of cars waiting, some of them UN cars. Hopefully they're actually delivering that aid. But you can see here that there are just pallets upon pallets upon pallets of aid waiting to be distributed. Again, medicine being donated to the people of Gaza, yet not being distributed. Sanitary supplies. Here we have a collection of aid from the UAE. Again, not being distributed by the United Nations. I have behind me aid from Egypt, and you can see sitting in the sun, rotting. Aid is literally just rotting here because the United Nations isn't picking it up. Well, at the same time, running an entire disinformation campaign across media and social media, accusing Israel of being the obstacle. As you can see, the hundreds of boxes here for the United Nations are not yet being distributed. You can see here, UNICEF for every child, but apparently not for the children of Gaza.
Wow, did she nail that? And I can't even remember if I gave the shout out to B. Hunter for gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships and AP Payne for gifting out 10, but I want to make sure I get that in along with Michael Veter, who says Russian propaganda is so full of sheet, it is starting to overflow. Yes, sir, that it is. Now, she points out something very clear, and I even saw it in the comments section as I was playing that video, that it is not a supply chain issue, it is a distribution issue. And the distribution issue falls on the side of the UN. The UN is failing to properly distribute the humanitarian aid. If you actually think about it, really what the UN is doing, or the World Food Program, is they're driving trucks until they get overran, and that becomes their distribution site. The problem is, like in the pictures of the sleepy Palestinians I showed you from earlier, it's not turning out so good. And that is where your true violence and clashes are taking place, because Hamas has basically said that if you're stealing from them, or if you're stealing humanitarian aid, if you're taking humanitarian aid from GHF, you are stealing from Hamas. And they are punishing them accordingly. So that kind of sucks. Sucks for them. Now, earlier today, Mike Huckabee and Steve Witkoff, and for the love of God, somebody needs to ask, like, I don't know who dressed Steve, but they really need to work on that. Like, seriously. Here you can see Mike and Steve just hanging out there, and Steve's got on his Make America Great Again hat sitting over there, but they ended up flying out to the GHF sites and got like shown around on the ground. There you can see Steve with his sweet Trump hat staying there in front of all the people over inside Gaza. What did they learn? Probably what we already know. If you want my opinion, this whole thing was a PR stunt, and I think it was a waste of freaking time. But either way, something that actually surprised me was the Palestinian people actually cheering them on. Now, I think this is something maybe that the French need to listen to, so I'm going to play it again. Those people are literally out there on the streets cheering, waiting in line for their food. They see like VIPs that end up getting flown in and they start cheering. What also blew my mind about this video, take a look at what they're standing on. They literally brought in AstroTurf for this. I highly doubt GHF decided it would be a good idea to put AstroTurf in just to walk around on in the middle of their freaking site. But for some reason, well, you know, we're the United States, so we got to make things special. So they ended up throwing in AstroTurf. It also looks like they ended up sitting down and had a meeting with, how do I want to say this? Is it maybe some locals or something? I don't know, but you can kind of see like they brought this local woman in back here and she's talking to this lady all the way over in the background, which is also kind of like interesting if we go and we analyze that, but I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to put people's lives at risk. Other thing, and I'm actually surprised that they included that in this photo op, unless she is somebody very, very important. They also included this guy over here down on the side, and it looks like he's got a little blue vest on, and he definitely appears to be a local. Same thing with this guy over here and this guy over here. You notice how they're all wearing those little funny masks covering up their faces? It's likely because they're like prominent members of the local population that have been meeting up and talking about this distribution. So while we might not have got a lot of information out of this meeting that they ended up having, we could actually deduct a lot just from looking at this one photograph alone. Like I said, you see that woman talking in the back, talking with what appears to be a U.S. female. Then you see several men covered in masks that definitely appear to be local nationals, all sitting around the table and talking to them. So it would be my assumption that they are working with local nationals to try to help with like the culling of the herd, if you will, and keeping them freaking calm, probably coming up with better distribution times and things like that. But I got to give a shout out. It wasn't just France that decided it'd be a good idea to conduct airdrops. Germany also came in conducting airdrops, dropping in a lot of medical equipment to the people inside Gaza as well. Now, it's interesting to me that you can actually see some of these pallets have become tangled up together over there. And yesterday I watched a video where there was a pallet that just came like burning in, like the parachute had like cigarette rolled and it was just like burning in down into Gaza, which probably crushed somebody's freaking tent, like, or at least that's what they're going to claim. But with all of this in mind, I want you guys to remember this, with all of this in mind, with all of this humanitarian aid that's stacked up, with nations that are coming doing this, My big curiosity is, has this just turned into a giant PR stunt for all of these different countries? Because all of these different countries definitely rest inside of the UN. And if I can find the information that says that the distribution is the issue, that you can see the amount of humanitarian aid that's stacked up on both the Gaza side and the Israeli side of the border, the issue becomes readily apparent. Readily apparent. That is a distribution problem, and that the UN's World Food Program doesn't have enough people and needs security in order to make this happen. And so the thing that kind of like makes me wonder inside is I know there is not a snowball's chance in hell that the people inside Germany, France, the UK, Canada, all don't have that information. And so when I see them not pushing the UN to properly do their job with it all there, then something even more sinister comes out, which is all of the world's leaders are essentially pushing a starvation narrative, knowing what the real issue is, to gain what? Favor? What are they getting out of this? Because if all of those nations, which are very large and have a lot of pull at the UN, all showed up together and said, you know what, UN, we need to secure these humanitarian aid routes. We need peacekeepers inside to make sure this humanitarian aid gets to where it's going. Additionally, we need to provide more personnel on the ground in order to make sure that that aid can actually get delivered. Maybe we'll offer some help to Israel. Not that they need it, because they're pushing more than enough humanitarian aid through for the current like load. And everything that's stacked up on the Israeli side, a bulk of it's got to be inspected at this point, I would think. So it's just all literally sitting out there, soaking, stacked in the sun, waiting for somebody to take it in. And that is the real issue that nobody is talking about in mainstream media. We have a couple of reporters that are doing it, but nobody's really talking about it. And I don't understand why. Canada, the UK, the French, all of them. Germany even conducting these humanitarian aid drops without actually speaking of the real problem paints a really disgusting image. And that image is that these people are using, like, these nations are like pushing this starvation narrative, blaming it on Israel, blaming it on the United States, knowing damn good and well that the people inside of Gaza are starving. And I know I've spoke my piece on them before, but also remember that I actually sat back here on this podcast before and I told you guys that, like, you should be praying for your enemies and you should actually treat them kindly when possible, right? And this is the part that kind of ticks me off, is that it's not Israel that's using this starvation as a weapon, in my opinion. It's not Israel using starvation as a weapon. It's the UK, it's Canada, it's France, it's Germany. It's all of these nations that are not legitimately doing something. Instead, we see, what, 4 or 5 pallets being dropped by the French after complaining that they have an issue? Great, you guys got your PR video. And then we have this coming out from Germany. Great, you guys got your PR video. But the people on the ground are still starving and you're literally doing nothing about it other than condemning the US and Israel, who are the only nations that are actually doing something 655% more effective than the UN. It's kind of disgusting when you think about it. I had that like realization today and it just, I don't know, man. It just kind of like made me sick to my stomach. Well, I see the comments down in the comment section with people say, like, it makes me sick to, like, how long until we tell those countries to go get effed? Dude, honestly, it's that time. We do need to tell those countries, like, where to stick it, to be perfectly honest. We really do. And I think we are actually at the brink of doing that because they're all sitting back here. And if you guys missed, if you guys actually want, like, the facts and figures on this, by the way, before I get into the next segment of the show, if you guys want the facts and figures on this, I'm going to actually put it down in the chat. And I encourage you all to go over there and look over it. If any of you guys are in here and you're questioning the information that I'm putting out right now, I'm going to provide to you guys the actual legitimate facts of this. I mean, the legitimate facts. Because what the legitimate facts state is that the UN is the problem. And I can't stress that enough. The amount of humanitarian aid that is just being lost inside Gaza by the World Food Program and their lack of doing anything about it. And I'm just going to drop this down in the chat. You guys feel free to go over and read it. It's got all the stats and all the figures. You guys, if you're over on X, you can see it. If you're not on X, not a big deal, but I just shared with you guys all of the stats. And the stats are the stats. And those numbers come from the UN. They come from the World Food Program. They come from COGAT. They come from all sorts of places to be able to get that. Patrick Loudon says, do you think the UN was loading aid with arms and supplies intentionally or initially or the other Arab countries? Could this be why the UN is stalling because issues with sneaking stuff in? It's a very big possibility. I do believe at this point, you know, with like those facts in mind, that it would be impossible for these world leaders not to know that that stuff is going on over inside Gaza. And it's impossible for them not to know those stats and figures that I just pinned up at the top of the chat because the UN's published them. So, yeah, humanitarian aid has been used to smuggle in weapons and supplies to Hamas. And when you think about it, this war has been going on for almost 2 years now. Hamas has been continuously attacking the IDF. They always have rockets. They always have bullets. They have brand new IEDs. They have new precursors to make explosives. They have all of this stuff. It's got to come from somewhere. And you can't say it's coming in from Egypt anymore because the Kerem Shalom crossing, or excuse me, not the Kerem Shalom, but the Philadelphia crossing down on the southern end of Gaza that connects the Sinai Peninsula, it has been locked down. So it's not coming in through there. It's not. So where is it coming from? The only logical explanation is it's coming through the humanitarian aid. And that makes sense for why Hamas wants to control it. Even more so, there's got to be intel getting to Hamas telling them what shipments of aid it's on. There could be trackers hidden there. There's all sorts of stuff that could be happening. Estimated timeframes, things of that nature, to when Hamas is literally going and grabbing that crap. And there's no way for Israel to catch all of it. It's absolutely disgusting. And then we have dudes like Tucker Carlson that are platforming that Green Beret. GBNT actually put out some new information on him. Turns out he got arrested for assault on a female. GBNT said it was his wife. This is from, what is that, December 10th of 2021? Yep. And so that raises another point of concern for me as well. Like, not only did we have Tucker Carlson, the BBC, Bernie Sanders, I mean, you name them, they all chose to platform this guy. And we talked about the amount of lies that he actually has and he's been caught in. But now he turns out that he actually got arrested for what appears to be domestic violence back in 2021. So that also leads me to question and say, okay, well, if this is the case, how well are those contractors on the ground being screened? I'm not saying that this guy is telling the truth. What I'm saying is, how freaking desperate were they to let a DV charge fly? Now, I don't think he was convicted, because if he was convicted, he wouldn't be allowed to carry firearms, and the U.S.-based contracting companies likely wouldn't have been able to hire him, at least to the best of my knowledge. So I doubt he was convicted. But if he wasn't carrying a firearm and he was there strictly in an administrative role, then they could have hired him. And what was his role that he had? Oh, that's right. He was in charge of logistics, not security. And so if that's the case, and he was inside of Gaza not carrying a weapon, well, there you would have it. Kind of strange, isn't it? So again, I'd question the people that they're actually hiring to do these jobs. But at the same time, I think it needs to get looked into a little bit more. Lame, any man can get arrested for DV at this age. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. But when you start looking at this stuff and you start stacking up his history, his reputation inside of the community, his reputation inside of the contractor community, the lies that he just went out telling, how he got caught red-handed in his lies, it kind of makes you wonder if it's just not true. Seriously. And you can say it's lame all you want, but the problem is that that is a big freaking red flag. That is a massive red flag. But let's go ahead and shift our focus out of there, because I think Iran is actually going to be a bigger problem in the near future. I want you guys to look at this headline. This is not a joke headline. This is a very, very real headline. Iran demands compensation as a condition for resuming nuclear talks with the U.S. Now, over the last couple of weeks, I've showed you guys that Iran, their foreign minister and their president, have both came out and stated that they're not going to give up enriching uranium. They won't do it. They said they don't want to. And now they're demanding that, which to me is ridiculous. Trump actually got asked about this yesterday. Just Ryan becoming a true supporter. Welcome to the club, my friend.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. I'm representing the foreign poll today. I'm asking you two questions on foreign policy. The first one, do you plan to re-engage diplomatically with Iran, go with direct talks with them, or are you happy with the current situation, having no deal with Iran?
Well, Iran has been acting very badly. They were decimated, their nuclear capability, that potential, which could have happened within 3 or 4 weeks, was decimated. It's been obliterated. The Atomic Energy Commission said the place is just decimated. Now they can start again, but they'd start in different sites because they were hit. I tell you what, the job these pilots did with their B-2 bombers, those unbelievable machines, they traveled 36 hours without stop. And they hit every single target, every bomb hit every, they went right down the chutes. And then, as you know, we shot 30 rockets from submarines that were hundreds of miles away, and they hit every target. So they can start again, but they haven't been saying the right thing. I will say Iran has not been saying the right thing. They have not been speaking nicely, and they should be. Yeah, please.
Iran's not been saying the right thing, and they have not been speaking nicely. Delta Parker coming in with $4.99 says, sent you a message on X 15 hours ago with Gaza BS from 5 years ago. Video was about Brady. I sent screenshots. I've got 60,000-ish followers over on X right now, and I have so many people that DM me information on a daily basis, brother. I will look for it. It is likely that it got buried, because I do my best to go through and check them out, but a lot of messages do end up getting buried. Delta Parker, keep my info private if you share it at all. Yeah, of course, man. Of course, I would do that. I tend not to do that unless I get permission from those people. That's just not how you do it, right? Iran, this is a big problem. I talked about the other day, I talked about how Iran has had multiple alleged Mossad attacks, and Iranian officials have claimed to arrest multiple Mossad members or paid agents, if you will, near some of their nuclear sites. And so it looks like Mossad is keeping a very close watch on it. There is the hopes of a regime change taking place over inside of Iran, but all of that looks like it's falling through. All of it looks like it's falling through. And so people have been quietly sleeping, Iran has been over there just quietly sitting by saying that we are going to enrich uranium all that we want. And if you want us to come back to the negotiating table, you have to essentially give us reparations for bombing the crap out of us. I don't think that's going to turn out very well for Iran. There's another interesting portion of Iran that I just learned as well. And this one within itself should probably bother you guys. This is, again, a very tiny article that I was able to like locate today. And I want you to take a look at what it says. Iran set to buy Chinese J-10C fighter jets after Israel drubbing. Iran is reportedly turning to China's J-10C fighter jets after its Air Force was left grounded during Israeli and American airstrikes. It exposed sanction-battered Tehran's aging fleet. The move to procure the same J-10C jets, which are compatible with the PL-15 missiles, which Pakistan recently used against India, follows delays in Russia's delivery of Su-35s. So I want you to think about that. Iran is trying to acquire advanced fighter jets from China and Russia. They also are refusing to stop enriching uranium. And they doubled down and they said, United States, you have to pay for the damages that were caused, or else we're not coming to the negotiating table. And even if we do come to the negotiation table, we're not giving up enriching uranium. This is not a joke. It is very possible that the U.S. and Israel end up bombing the crap out of Iran yet again. And when we do that, it's going to spark massive, massive tensions across the region. It's going to be a huge pain. I don't think, like, again, I think people are sleeping on Iran. That is a very real headline, demanding compensation. Yep. Now, the other thing that I ended up noticing as we end up talking about this, here's a cute little American Iran flag picture for you guys as we go into this, is the Taiwan is actually worried about China invading it, and they've been preparing for it. I did a little bit of research. It looks like China has actually done probes a lot into Taiwan's like territorial waters. It looks like China has practiced invading Taiwan from four different directions, north, south, east, and west, and that they are preparing for it. And here's the next step in this. Not only have they been doing that, but Taiwan says that they are worried that China could invade them as soon as 2027. Incog Faraday coming in, gifting out five Speak the Truth memberships. Thank you, sir. Now, here's the issue. Right now, it looks like Russia might be trying to enter back into peace talks with the U.S. And Ukraine, even though we all know that's not going to go well. They've only got a couple days left before the new tariffs by Trump end up kicking in. And if that's the case, and those peace talks emerge, well, then we're going to need a new conflict. Over the last year, we saw two of them spark off. We saw one between India and Pakistan, and we saw the other one between Thailand and what the hell is the name of that other peon country over there, right? Both of them ended up ending pretty quickly. But interesting enough, both of the instigators in that case have ties back to Russia and China. Yesterday, we ended up learning that India is no longer going to be taking oil from Russia. So that's going to put a huge dent in their freaking expendable budget to go towards a war effort. If China ends up sparking off a war, which again, remind you, we're more than midway through 2025. So by 2027, you're talking next year. It's not that far off. And there's no end in sight for either of these two conflicts, the war in Israel, the war with Iran, potentially, and what's taking place between Russia and Ukraine. If those two things stall out, it is possible that China uses that opportunity to go in Cambodia. Thank you. It is possible that China seizes that opportunity to draw attention away from those two conflicts. That's a problem, right? Or maybe these big peace deals come off and that ends up happening. The U.S. also hasn't firmly came out and said that it's going to end up defending Taiwan if China goes in. Instead, we've taken kind of like this weird gray area stance on it. Last year, I had talked to you guys that Biden didn't necessarily come out and say that he wasn't... I don't know, he wasn't necessarily going to end up defending Taiwan. Michael Veter says we should see how much Iran wants to wants and deliver an equal monetary value via B2. I agree. Like if it was me, that's what I would do, because what Iran has continued to do since we've struck them is they've continued to fund the Houthis. The Houthis have continued to push to strike Israel. Red Sea is just as freaking shut down as it was, if not more. This time last year, as a matter of fact, the Houthis said that they were going to be targeting all the ships. This came out like last week. Houthis said that they were going to be targeting all the ships that are going to be traveling through the Red Sea, not just the ones headed for Israel. So they actually ramped up their game, believe it or not. And where do you think that they got that freaking like influence to do that from? Where do you think it is that they got that backing from to do that? Probably this man right up here that's on your screen. That'd be the Ayatollah. And then we determine that China and Iran are in negotiations to get advanced fighter jets. I mean, come on. The writing is on the wall, just as it is with this conflict over inside of Ukraine and Russia. The writing's on the wall. Iran's going to be a problem, and we're going to have to deal with it. China is going to be a problem, and we're going to have to deal with it. That's just one small, little, tiny portion. I don't even feel like talking about Syria right now off the top of my head. I just can't, but we'll get back to it. You know what? Let's break up the monotony here just a second. This actually happened over in the UK with another reported immigrant that was causing a disturbance that got put in check. Looks like the people in UK are getting tired of it. Hold on, let's do this. Let's get him standing back up. Let's just go ahead and slow that down. Let's just put that playback speed at about 50%, mute it, and let it ride. Wait for it. Boom! Headbutt him straight down. People in the UK are sick and tired of the crap. Like, absolutely sick and tired of it. That needed to be like a slow-mo replay regardless. Like, I don't care. That thing just needed to happen. Look at that, man. Just boom. Just head, forehead, straight through his nose. Look at that. Perfect connection. People in the UK are getting pissed off. Now, I did report to you guys that everything had kind of calmed down over inside of the UK with all of the protests and stuff, but that's just simply not the case. More and more people are actually protesting and getting their butts out on the street. So, personally, I think that if the United States and the rest of the world doesn't open up its freaking eyeballs and stop covering them up and see what's actually going on, that this is going to be very commonplace across the U.S. Additionally, we have another problem with Russia. Another big problem with Russia. Oh, come on. Don't do this to me. Here we go. Have another big problem with Russia. Putin went over into Belarus and ended up meeting with the president. Of all of the stupid things he said, he's saying that there's not been a waste of Russian life, that basically Ukraine is their territory, so on and so forth. But the other big thing that ended up coming out of this was that Russia is now posturing Oshkosh ballistic missiles over inside of Belarus, and that the ballistic missiles that they want to place there are already in production. They know exactly where they're going and that they're going to end up doing that. So why would he be moving them up over into Belarus? Well, it's a hell of a lot closer to the EU, in my opinion. Here's the other problem. This is another step in escalation. This is not Putin moving towards like peaceful negotiation. This is Putin that's actually moving in on Ukraine's borders. This gives another avenue of approach for the ballistic missiles coming down over into Ukraine. Over the last, 72 hours, there's been massive bombings, massive waves of drone attacks and cluster ballistic missiles that ended up getting shot into Kiev. 13 so far was the last count that I got in civilians that have been killed, including a 6-year-old boy. Over 100 were wounded in the last attack alone. 13 killed and over 100 wounded inside the city by Russian munitions. And yet the world remains silent and Putin just continues to go and stack everything up. While Trump is pushing to make sure that everything goes better and that we sit properly on the world stage using peace through strength, it would certainly appear to me that none of the United States' enemies really give a crap. Sanctions aren't working. Pushing Iran, bombing Iran isn't working. We backed off way too early, in my opinion. Pushing sanctions on China, pushing tariffs on China, pushing tariffs on those that are doing business with Russia, going around the sanctions that were placed on them. None of that's working. The only actual act that has worked was bombing Iran to slow down their uranium enrichment. And even then, Iran still didn't back off. And so if you also read the writing on the wall and say peace through strength, we have tried peace for almost a year now. And eventually that peace is going to run out. Texas now says that the number total killed in that last strike was 31. Wow, that got updated. 31 killed. It's absolutely nuts. So for Putin to be doing all that, the real question is, where is it going to be going? Seriously, like, in what direction could that possibly be going? It doesn't look good. And I don't think Putin's going to come to the table. I don't think we're going to get peace between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine's not going to give up any territory, and neither is Russia. So that leads back to war, and that leads back to the war on attrition. So it's just going to continue to go. It's not going to go anywhere. Ukraine's going to continue to get funded, and this thing is going to rage on until, like, there's an actual ending brought to it. But Putin's also getting more and more weak. So I still stand by my assessment saying that I believe Putin has a very, like, very strong possibility of busting out the chemical weapons, which over 10,000 chemical weapons attacks have been documented inside of Ukraine. But that was mostly CS-type gas or tear gas. The question is when is he going to end up bringing out the blister agents? Now, the other thing that holds true, which you can read directly through Russian propaganda, is that if they are so strong and powerful, why did they need to use the tear gas? Well, they had to use the tear gas to uproot the Ukrainians from their defensive positions to try to move them and overrun their positions. Problem is, over the last week straight, Russia has made pretty much zero territorial gains. Zero. And they've been in constant offensive operations, and they've been constantly getting whittled away. So when is it all going to end? That's a very good question. I don't think that there is going to be an ending, to be perfectly honest. I'd love to talk to any of you guys. I'm opening up the Discord right now because it's been a minute since we had a good Discord chat. I want to have a good Discord chat with you guys. So that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm opening up the Discord chat. Ooh, got to adjust my settings. For some reason, my virtual webcam is off. I got to turn that sucker on so that you guys can see me over inside the Discord and come up over there. Turn off my cam, turn it back on. Texas, if you're in the house, I'd love for you to be able to pull up. But I do have the Discord open up. You guys are more than welcome to come in. Raise your hands, jump up in here, get in the chat. Come have a talk. Tell me what it is that's on your mind. You hear music, Linda Liu. That is the Discord music playing as I open the chat over inside Discord. So, yes, get up in there, raise your dang hands. I want to hear from you. Texas, if you're there, obviously I want to hear from you and hear about what took place on the ground. I actually heard a story from Texas earlier. He knew some people that were on the ground over near one of those cluster munitions actually struck. And it's troubling, to be perfectly honest with you, that Russia is openly using cluster munitions on, like, major urban areas over inside of Ukraine, and the international community is silent about it. They're quick to condemn Gaza, they're quick to condemn Israel, they're quick to condemn frickin' United States of America, everybody but Russia. And that's blowing my mind. UN, in my opinion, has just essentially been corrupted. And I never used to believe things like that, that we could see corruption like that on the world stage, but it really, really, really starts to make me wonder. It really does. Whew, it makes me sick inside. Texas, what's up, buddy?
Yeah, I'm having a connection issue. I'm trying to sort it, so I'm just on my phone. So I'll be muted for a minute. I'm trying to sort the internet over here.
I think you really sound pretty good. I think you sound pretty good, man.
Yeah, because I'm on my phone. I'm not on the computer.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair.
Yeah, I'm working on fixing it. I'm having an internet issue here. One second.
Yeah, no worries, man. Take your time. If it's been a big pain for you, take your time. You able to get it back up? Yeah, and if you guys got gifted on a Speak the Truth membership today, you go over the posts on YouTube from this channel, you guys will be able to see it. You'll have another video, by the way, everybody, that's going to end up coming out later on this evening to give you more of an update of the present situation over inside the Middle East. So be on the lookout for, like, that video. If you guys missed yesterday's video upload, please go take a look at it. It actually gives you all the facts and figures for everything that's going on over inside Gaza with the humanitarian aid situation. So if you don't want to read the posts that I have pinned up to the top of the chat and videos are more your thing, go watch that video. That video has all the information that you need to know about what's actually taking place over inside of Gaza. And it gives you a very, very clean outline for the humanitarian situation over there as well. So go take a look at that. I think it's pretty interesting. You guys need to get a hold of that as well. When is Ukraine going to start feeding poor Russians? They're not. Ukraine's not going to be feeding the Russians at all. Don't expect that whatsoever. So I'm going to give it another minute here for Texas to go ahead and jump in the chat. And if he's not able to get in here and nobody else is raising their hand, I'm going to go ahead and close down the chat on Discord in case you guys, but if anybody wants to, now's your time to get in there. Matt can do a check the news in Mogadishu. What happened in Mogadishu? I know we ended up having a very large airstrike over there just a couple weeks ago. And that airstrike was targeting Al-Qaeda or members of Al-Qaeda, or I'm sorry, ISIS. Emerging allegations. Let me check this. For Mogadishu, emerging allegations claim Mogadishu government undermining U.S. interests in the region. Reports circulating among diplomatic and security analysts suggest that the U.S. and the UN-backed Somali federal government in Mogadishu may be shifting its strategic alignment towards China. No, that's not good. Raising concerns about the future of American and Indian influence over the Indian Ocean. According to regional observers, the Somali government is allegedly engaging more closely with China-backed interests, potentially at the expense of long-standing U.S. partnerships. The situation has drawn comparisons to the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Policy voices are now questioning whether the United States should reconsider its approach in the Horn of Africa. That would kind of make sense, because if China is able to get influence over Somalia, that is where the weapon shipments that are going into Yemen from Iran are coming from. Additionally, our little frickin' port over there in the Horn of Africa is going to have a bunch of jihadists surrounding it. No problem if that ends up happening. Texas, what's up, buddy?
Yeah, still having that issue, but I'm on my phone. How is it going?
It goes good, man. It goes good. Talk to me over there. What's going on? Tell me about what happened in Kiev.
Well, it's just Kiev is a bit crazy. A little bit closer to home, this one I told you on my girlfriend's side. Her aunt lived in that apartment building, or lives in that apartment building, and they were home, but they were on the further side of the apartment building, so obviously okay. They were able to get out with help of rescue. Her aunt and two kids, I think a son and a daughter, were home sleeping at the time. Apparently, it was cluster. Even the locals are saying, if you can read Ukrainian, I'll send you the message from a girlfriend directly saying that they're not sure, but all they hear, there was like little clusters falling through the windows because it was like an air burst. So that's pretty much what they were saying. And the death toll today, the rescue operations completed and the final residents were found, which was a woman and her two young teenage daughters, or not even teens yet, okay. Were all three found killed. So the death toll has reached 31 and 178 hospitalized injured.
178. So those figures have doubled, is what you're telling me.
Yes. Because there's a lot of, when something like this happens, there's a lot of injuries that people like rush to their hospital themselves, and it doesn't get reported right away, and it takes time for the locals to pull up the reports on these things. So it turns out that, yeah, the numbers are a lot higher on both casualties. As far as the 31, six are confirmed to be under the age of 10, with the youngest as young as just turned 2.
Jesus.
This last woman that was found, with her two daughters, they were all obviously together in one room when the building collapsed on them. Her husband is active duty currently on the front.
That's freaking sad. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that update. I really appreciate it. Morgan Anthony, what you got, friend?
Hey, man, how you doing? I just wanted to kind of put my two cents in on the thing. I've been saying for quite a while, and a lot of people don't have the foresight to look down the road. Putin's really screwed himself, in my opinion. He put himself in a position where he can't back off without risking assassination by his own people, and he can't really go forward without going to the inevitable and horrible acts.
Right.
I just see it ultimately ending bad for him and his people more than anybody. He needs to do the right thing and you know, do some kind of talk and just lay off. And as far as the other angle with the Israeli thing, people just have to realize that a lot of that's just disruptive bantering from Hamas's side.
Yeah.
No other nation in the world does what Israel does with their preemptive get out of the area stuff. It's just both of these factions trying to pump and stroke themselves, and they're not inevitably not going to win. I just hope that listeners and people understand that those people are not starving. I've seen starving people. Are they hungry? Yeah, probably, sure, but like, they're not sunk in. You can't, it's not like over around Mogadishu where you can see people starving. They, you know, they look like a skeleton wearing a skin suit.
Yeah, no, they're not. And that's, well, here's the thing. I don't think like the vast majority of the population is starving. I think there's like little bits that are getting kind of like crapped on because their men have been killed in combat, fighting against the IDF. They've blown themselves up, whatever the case may be. And it's the women that are having problems getting the food for their kids. I believe, like, honestly, you know, I'm going back and forth on it, but I really, the amount of humanitarian aid that's been going in over the last couple months, even with GHF and GHF and the World Food Program combined, goes to about like 1.25 meals a day. So assuming that all of that looted food is going to be available, right? Even if it's sold at like inflated rates or whatever, you could assume that a lot of it's going to be available, but I don't think it is because Hamas is stealing it. But I don't see a lot of extremely scrawny, starving human beings that are over there collecting that aid. They don't look like Holocaust victims.
No, not at all. And I mean, this is hard for non-military people to understand. And this is just strictly my opinion as kind of a bitter person that's been in warfare. They started it. And another thing that more civilians need to understand, the food aid and the stuff that Israel and the U.S. has been trying to do, make no mistake, would not happen if the shoe was on the other foot.
I agree. I agree with that statement.
And as far as the Ukrainian thing, Putin is just self-deluding himself. He really doesn't have a successful way out unless he does some major war crimes. And then at that case, it's game on, take him out, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I think Putin is probably going, like, if this continues, I see, like, I was talking about this the other day, what I could actually see happening with Putin isn't something like what happened with Wagner all the way back during the beginning, where you have, like, a full-on freaking, it's like a regime change trying to happen like that. What I would actually see happening is, like, Putin getting poisoned and dying, or, you know, something of that nature, and that they already have, like, a new political party in place that's going to jump in and take over, or new power, and just slowly start changing Russia and reforming it a little bit over time. So,
yeah, because in my opinion, and I said it at the very beginning, I was like, oh, he just put himself in a new no-win situation.
Yeah.
And people were like, really? And it's like, yeah, give it time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give it time. He's going to get killed.
The Ukrainian people are very proud people, and I think even early on was very underestimated, sir.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Truthfully, I really do agree with you. And I think that Putin is going to end up getting his crap pushed in. I think that they're going to, like, seriously, I think that their military industrial complex is kind of like slowly collapsing. You remember when Joe Biden stated that the reason we ended up giving the cluster munitions is because we were running out of mortars and stuff. So when I see Russia that's doing the same type of crap, knowing that they're going to get slammed in the international community, kind of makes me wonder the same. When I see them using the gas on the front lines to uproot Ukrainians out of the trenches, I think the same thing. The only thing it seems that they have an endless supply of is manpower. And that is also slowly starting to dwindle because the people inside of Russia are starting to get pissed off.
Yeah, and then that leaves them with the only thing left, which is crap talking.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say, because a lot of people have been asking me questions and stuff with the knowledge I have, and it's on both fronts, and it's like, no, we are trying to feed people. It's Hamas rhetoric, and on the other end, no, yeah, Putin screwed himself. Just give it time.
I agree.
CAA. And in Texas, well, I just wanted to say bless you to you and yours.
Go ahead, brother. And we'll bring up CAA.
I just wanted to say blessings to you and yours, Texas, and I'm going to step down and let everybody else talk.
Yeah, thank you. On a side note, what a lot of people are sleeping on today, maybe still sleeping on, is the massive bill that was just put forward in Senate, that allocates over $54 billion to Ukraine over the next 2 years without any like restrictions once that passes. That's not included any sales. And another massive update is the Pentagon, according to sources, saying that Secretary of Defense himself ordered one of the largest batch of AMRAAM missiles from Raytheon, worth $3.5 billion and at $1.2 million apiece. You can do the math. That's a lot of AMRAAMs to be transferred over through allied countries to Ukraine, because obviously that's the primary ammunition on the F-16s that they're using for air assets. So there's a big shift happening on that side, as at the same time that, I don't know, I see a lot of people sleeping on it. We'll see what happens now that Putin did this whole like parade video TikTok today. So we'll see what happens. I think that the United States really started waking up when like people in power weren't just talking what was told to them. They actually started sitting into actual intel briefings with actual people with the intel. Then you saw a big shift change in everything, in the attitude and in everything. Plus, one thing we know, and I've said that before even Trump was elected, when we were talking on this podcast about this and about this, one of the things I said from day one, and people like, yeah, Trump's bad for Ukraine or all of that. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't care what Trump is bad for. I know that Trump doesn't like to be embarrassed. He doesn't like to be made a fool of.
And he has been.
And the only thing Putin has been doing is been making a fool of him. So he's not going to let that go. He said it clearly on TV this week. He said, if people are bad to me, I do some things about it. He was talking about the people he's suing in the news outlets, but it's just the personality he has. He's an old-time New Yorker, so he's not going to let it go. If Putin is going to keep running his mouth, he's going to make sure that he shuts it somehow. So we'll see what happens. I have patience, but it just sucks that a lot of people are dying while we wait.
No, mine's starting to wear thin, to be perfectly honest. Like, it really is. Like, we need to, for a lack of a better term, shit or get off the pot. And like, there's only so much evidence that you need that Russia is not going to come around. There's only so much evidence that you need that Hamas isn't going to come around or that Iran isn't going to come around before you finally have to lay the hammer down. And none of those people that we just mentioned, none of them are going to accept anything shy of that. They're not going to listen to anything.
I have a question. I'm not a historian, but did Germany drop pallets of food into the UK in World War II?
I do not believe so.
They absolutely did not.
Did Germany drop pallets of food anywhere else in Europe that they invaded and smashed the pieces because of whatever? Like I know that they were the aggressor, or we're not talking aside. I'm like, since did America drop pallets of food into Iraq?
No,
we did. We did.
I don't understand.
We did help to facilitate like distribution of aid.
Yeah, infrastructure distribution, and it was like help with bringing power to certain villages or whatever. Like all of this makes sense. But what I'm saying is like you can't scream that we're giving them food, and like you watch firsthand of these trucks driving with dudes on AKs on it, and the world is like, no, they're protecting the food from who? Like,
yeah, I know.
I'm so confused. Like,
well,
it's just openly visible.
Chuck Holton put out a very good video yesterday that people should go watch over on his YouTube channel that makes a case for not supplying humanitarian aid. Seriously. I want to hear from C88, though, and I'm going to pull up Mac, and then they're going to be the last ones that we got. Go ahead, C88. What you got, man? You've been patiently waiting.
Thank you. I was going to say, has anybody seen the latest intel reports that Russia's upgrading the T-54/55s now to put out on the front lines?
I have not seen that.
Yeah, it looks like they're pulling them out of the yards and actually refurbishing them to put out on the front lines now.
Is it helping them at all?
Probably not.
I've had reports of them actually on the battlefield already. So yes, those are actual World War II or even one, like in between one and two era tanks that they are rolling out, which mostly as like modified infantry transport. So they like build like a big shed on it.
Treat them like APCs.
It's not really Yeah, pretty much, but you can't haul that many people in it because it's still a tank. What they do is they build like a big metal shed on it with some barbed wire, and they use that to just transfer a bunch of people. But yeah, they have been doing that. What do you mean? Russia's been using donkeys to transport ammunition on the front. So like, it's not really going to be a surprise of seeing them use 75 to 100-year-old equipment.
Yeah, the T-54/55 is 1954-1955. So that's the technology you're talking about.
Now, to be fair, at one point in time, I considered using donkeys to transport equipment over inside of Afghanistan. Just want to throw that out there. But it was also
Matt, it's a different when you're climbing up a very cliffy mountains that those donkeys.
I know.
and walking across a big open field carrying a donkey that's hauling RPGs for you. That's a big difference.
I had to throw it out there. I had to throw it out there because, you know, there's a counter argument. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. Yeah. There's a big difference between those two situations. Yep. Not that we didn't have the mechanized capability to take care of it. Russia doesn't. Converting old freaking World War II tanks into APCs is a joke. It's just it's a joke. So they're kind of screwed.
But no unnecessary losses have been taken place in this
according to
special
Putin.
Military operation.
Texas,
and
real,
Ukraine,
real curious. No, Texas, I actually have like a question that I'm curious for you to answer. Yesterday, I don't think you were here in the morning's live stream, right? So,
I was in and out. No, I wasn't. Yeah.
Ukrainian Soft did a raid and successfully captured an island just south of Kherson over near Crimea.
So, correction there. That is not, it's not really an island. It's actually a sandbar that connects to the peninsula.
Okay.
With very shallow, so in high tide it'll be like an island, but in low tide it'll be a peninsula connecting to the Crimean Peninsula. And yes, they did land on it. Russians are trying to dispute that by saying, no, they didn't actually land there. They just fired at our positions, but we were able to repel them, and they left when Ukraine is like, oh, really? So then Ukraine released video footage of them actually doing the beach landing and moving up and placing charges on radar systems. And Russia didn't release any video. So yes, they did do that. One of the things that people are sleeping on is what Ukraine has been doing towards the Crimean Peninsula, because Russia's biggest projection of power in that direction was the Black Sea Fleet. One thing that Russia has not been using at all in this war for the last quite some time is their Black Sea Fleet, because their Black Sea Fleet is right now, for the most part, like, I'm going to say not for the most part, but for a large part of it, acting as like houses for fish. Mm-hmm. So right now they're not using their Black Sea Fleet, so they can't really project that power that they did on that on Crimea, because Ukraine can obviously have soft guys landing on physical Crimean peninsula and on the little sandbars, islands, sure, and whatever around it. Yes, that is absolutely true. They took out a big radar system and some other assets, and Russia's just screaming and saying, the Russian bloggers are just screaming and saying that that's not true. The operation went differently. Ukraine is lying. But Ukraine released video and Russia.
Yeah, I mean, it's so indisputable now.
Ukrainian gore guys are, some of these guys are good. I could tell you one thing. People are sleeping of the capability what some of these people do. Well, it's like so much you can learn in training.
I think the overall big picture, like, I mean, kudos to them, right? But I think the overall big picture is what you had just brought up about it, you know, kind of being that little land bridge, right? Or that sandbar that they could essentially use to start working their way in, like during that low tide. And it's essentially a back door over there. And so Russia is going to get kind of pissed off.
I think they 100% put a stash somewhere. Like, they've been doing that on Crimea for a while now. They've been doing small unit incursions with not much, like small firefights happen and then they bug off. Why would they do that? And I've asked that question before, and people were saying, what do you think they're doing? They're creating these dump sites for something, for partisans, for something that's right. going to come. It could take years to do something like that.
I brought this up last year, and everybody was like, Matt, you're crazy. That's never going to happen. Where I said, honestly, I think the best way for Ukraine to actually like start pushing Russia out is by cutting Crimea off first. Right.
100%.
Right. But for some reason, people think that that was like a weird concept and tell me that I'm freaking crazy for suggesting that. But when you pay attention to the battlefield, like the major amount of supplies that they're able to push across that way and like the amount of like storage that they've had over the last couple of years, it makes sense to cut that supply line off first and then start chopping away at the south, take back Melitopol, Mariupol, and then go deal with the DPR and Oppyargan.
So I'm not one for pushing people's YouTubes or channels. Like, everybody has an opinion. Everybody's allowed to say whatever they want. But I came across this guy, and I have to just say it here so people can go watch it. There's a guy called Paul Warburg. Mm-hmm. He released a video. It wasn't that long. I think he just released it today or yesterday. It was 10 hours ago, yeah. It's titled, The Siege of Crimea Has Already Begun. But nobody's talking about it. And he breaks this down so well. It's a 15-minute video, and he's talked about it before. He breaks this down so well, and people are sleeping on it. So if you have a few minutes and you want to familiarize anybody in here, want to familiarize with the situation in the Crimea Peninsula, watch that video. He breaks it down really well. Like, Ukraine made a statement a long time ago and said the war didn't, the Ukrainian president, the war didn't start in 2022. The right. war started in Crimea, and the war will end in Crimea.
Right.
That's the words that he said a long, long time ago, and people are sleeping on it. So if you want to go and watch that video, guys, you can learn a little bit about this. And I think that, like what Matt said a year ago and what he's saying now, is 100% accurate when it comes to this, because Crimea is... It was very strategically important for Russia for the Black Sea Fleet, so they can obviously support the Black Sea Fleet. And now that the Black Sea Fleet is pretty much not existing to the point where it was, it's the only reason they're holding on to Crimea is that it's like a trophy.
But yeah, they're trying to save face.
What's gonna end up happening is, it's like when you hold on to that trophy, but you end up losing the bigger picture because you were focusing on holding on that trophy, versus if Ukraine forces Russia to get in heavy combat on that peninsula, they're going to collapse the front line if they don't give it up.
Right.
They can't do both, especially when they're that separated. So I think that there's some big things happening there, and I don't think it's going to be tomorrow or today. I think this is something that, if you look at the history of any warfare, like the warfare that's in Ukraine, it's more guerrilla warfare than anything. It's very non-conventional war, and people don't really understand that because they see videos from parts of the war that looks like a tank is firing and that's a war, or a jet is dropping bombs. But it's a very non-conventional war, and I think that the biggest picture of this war is going to involve Crimea.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that's going to be the next big one that we end up seeing. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, that's all for me.
I appreciate you, man. I agree appreciate all you guys for jumping in.
Yeah, of course.
I agree as well. I do remember you saying that, Matt, a year ago. I just kind of kept it under my hat. And as far as the drop off, I think they're doing low unit kinetic stashes so they can do hit and runs, because the best way to get to him now is just to get in his freaking head, kind of similar to the massive invasion of drones on their aircraft. Every little kinetic strike that they can do unconventionally to get in his head is going to further their win.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, I do believe that as well. Mac, what you got, brother? You've been hanging out patiently.
So it's becoming more and more obvious to me. I don't know if anybody else feels like this, that I think China is probably the reason, or it has a very big part in all of the new conflicts that are starting. Like you said, they're helping out Iran with, you know, or they're talking about giving them fighter jets. you know, Cambodia. I mean, that's in that region. And I'm, if I'm not mistaken, they're kind of allies. At the very least, they're probably communists.
Okay.
So, you know, communists like communists.
Yeah.
The same thing with Russia. And I think that they're trying to start all of these little conflicts all around the world with United States allies, either to take focus off of Taiwan so that they can take it, or I don't know, just kind of.
I mean, there's a possibility. I was talking with Texas about it. He believes that there's a very strong possibility that China might move on Taiwan in like a matter of months, if not weeks. And when you listen to the politicians
Taiwan main island. I'm talking about the surrounding islands that is Taiwanese territory. Well, but it's like,
you know, it's funny.
There's obviously,
listen to this. Chinese army has carried out a massive deployment of military personnel to Fujian, a city close to Taiwan.
Yeah.
According to local sources, only the operation order of President Xi Jinping is currently awaited. So it looks like Russia, or I'm sorry, not Russia, but China has actually mobilized all their troops getting ready to take it.
It looks like 2013 Russia around doing the things that they were doing around Crimea with their navy.
It does. That's exactly
what I'm saying. And then they didn't do anything. They just, people just showed up. You know what I mean? It wasn't them, because they had to save face, but it was pretty much the exact same thing. I think China is just a little bit more bolder this time, and they're at the point where they're like, we're going to do it one way or the other. It's just a matter of time, and we don't care what anybody says. Like, that's the attitude that China has about it. I think, like, people are sleeping on that conflict really, really badly, and they're going to wake up very soon, much sooner than it looks.
Yeah.
Like, people are saying 2027. I think it's before the year's out, there's going to be some sort of outbreak of some sort of conflict in that region. That's my opinion, but what do I know?
Yeah,
I'm looking for Fujian on the map. Like, I just ended up putting it up on the screen, and yeah, I mean, it's pretty dang close. Puts it like right up over there. I don't even know the distance between these two, but I mean, if they're moving them that dang close, I mean, that's 100 miles-ish.
That's wild.
Yep.
Well, it makes sense, because China's got an age problem. The population is aging very rapidly. If they're going to pull this off, they have to do it in the next like 5 years, or they're going to run out of people.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but I think their economy is like crushing, right? Like getting crushed right now. And I think that they're just honestly going up with the land grabs while everybody else is doing it, because they're able to see that like the US, the UN, NATO, nobody's doing a damn thing about all of this. Like, all of our backstops that we had in place to make sure that these things didn't happen aren't doing anything, right? Like, we're watching these major communist freaking countries that are going and doing whatever the hell they want. And then you have these Islamic jihadist countries that are going and doing whatever they want. Why wouldn't China also jump in and capitalize on that? By the way, you know, Taiwan would have a huge impact on the U.S. as well.
Matt, to your opinion, when did all this start? And I know what I think when it started, but I'm just curious to hear when all this started. When all these countries started realizing that they can play around because the backstops are not there. When did all this start? I think, personally, it started with the withdrawal of Afghanistan. Like, it really, really did. Like,
I think that's like when it started to become withdrawal. More.
I think that when the talks of the withdrawal started.
No, I mean, I think it was before that, to be honest with you. I remember back in the early 2000s seeing like the Chinese presence over inside Africa and how they're scooping up and projecting influence over all these countries, which obviously minerals, et cetera, is all like a major part of it. Right. And economy and boosting and stuff like that. But they've been essentially colonizing a buttload for the last 20 plus years. And I think they've been kind of positioning themselves for like influence over different areas to kind of like bolster their economy and bolster like their influence on everything. I think that the actual stuff, like, yeah, you can point to like our crap withdrawal from Afghanistan or like earlier days, but prior to the withdrawal, as them seeing us in that way. But really, when we started backing off, we did a good job inside of Iraq, right? We still did. You know, we actually had a regime change in Iraq. When you look at Afghanistan, and you had Obama in power, right? And again, remember like the symbolism of Afghanistan that was supposed to be our, you know, retaliation for the 9/11 attacks. And what ended up happening was Obama did a massive troop surge, just like we did in Iraq. But the problem is it's different. It's different terrain. It's different environment. It's different culture. It's different everything. Troop surge in Iraq
worked. It's also different people you're fighting.
Yes. Troop surge in Iraq worked. Over inside of Afghanistan, it was also working. But the thing that Obama did was put a deadline on that troop surge. And I was over there when he ended up ordering the retrograde, like us starting to pull back. And we were having great success in everything that we were doing with those troop numbers. And I think what that ended up showing to the international community is that America doesn't have the resolve to actually do what needs to be done. If you really want my opinion, like that drawdown during the troop surge, like in 2000, what year was that, man? Was that 2012?
16, 7,
no,
7, 6,
no,
15,
the troop,
16?
No, the troop, no, that was like 2000. I think the troop surge started in like 2010, maybe, and the drawdown was 2012. Uh-huh. I have to go back and look. I honestly, I don't remember. Just too much stuff is jumbled together in my head. But yeah, I mean, we were having very good progress. Yeah, we were having great progress, yeah. And then we ended up pulling back. And that pullback, prematurely, just based on a random deadline, is where we've proved that you can attack the United States and we don't have the balls to finish the job. And instead, we switched to diplomatic efforts over inside of that country. And those diplomatic efforts are what got us to the position we did now. I remember watching
that. Like, yeah, we started giving money to the people we were fighting. That's literally what happened.
I watched like a very significant change. And then ISIS-K emerged over there, which was a huge problem. Huge, huge problem inside of Afghanistan when ISIS-K ended up emerging. And the things that got done to combat that, because the Afghan government didn't want to deal with it, which you got to think, they're under the influence of the Taliban. They're under the influence of several people, right? They didn't want to deal with it. I'm telling you this from firsthand accounts. The Afghan government didn't give two shits about ISIS inside of their country. And that is very telling. Very, very telling. And even knowing that back then, we continued on with things the way we did. It's freaking sad. They gave us like minimal support. We got freaking a couple commandos and said, ready, go. That's the Afghan government not giving two craps. US, we did have resolve. What did we do? We dropped a MOAB. Right? We also requested additional MOABs that got turned down. That again goes to show you that the US doesn't have the balls to carry through and do what needs to be done in order to end things. And that to me is very sad. It's and I think our enemies were watching. And I think now our enemies know, because that was in 2012 when we had that drawdown. 2 years later, Crimea gets invaded.
Yep. Crimea and then Donetsk, Luhansk.
2 years later.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And now, fast forward 10 years. You've got Iran with a buttload of stockpiled uranium that has been documented for years. And we let it reach this critical level. And we sat there for 10 years. And you could find them before reports of Iran enriching uranium. And we sat there on diplomatic efforts and allowed Iran to get to that level. And what did they do in the meantime? Iran built up the proxy forces around the Middle East while the U.S. was busy messing with Iraq, while we were busy fighting ISIS terrorists, while we were busy doing all of that, IRGC was out putting things in place to kind of affect, like take control over the Middle East, and we ignored it. We also ignored Russia working side by side with Hezbollah. We ignored all of these things, right? Russia ends up getting in a fight with like U.S. SOF. Nobody says a dang word.
Yep.
Nobody says a word about it. U.S. decimates them, but nobody says a word about it. U.S. doesn't respond. U.S. doesn't say shit. We're just like, yep, we killed you. Big deal. So what that shows the international community is that the U.S. doesn't care, that the U.S. doesn't have the guts to do what needs to be done, at least politically. And that, in my opinion, is the reason we're seeing things the way they are. And I think that is exactly the reason why we're going to have to, and if Trump doesn't grab his balls very soon, this thing's going to spin out of control. I think you are likely to see China invade Taiwan. I think you are likely to see Russia step up and use WMDs over inside of Ukraine. I think you are going to see, you know, Iran acquiring those freaking aircraft and bombing Israel. I think you're going to see those things.
I mean, we know now that over the last few weeks, it's confirmed reports from multiple intelligence agencies from countries around the world and in the region have been saying that over the last few weeks, multiple cargo aircraft from three different countries have been landing inside of Iran, unloading equipment. And now I saw a report today from well, again, people could say, oh, that's not very accurate because it's coming from Israel. But the Israeli defense sector has released information saying that Iran has been steadily restocking newer air defense assets, and they're trying to do now something where they're going to prepare for something where they can't get responded to because they have all new air defense assets from all these countries. Well, I don't know how true it is. I don't know how much Russia or North Korea has to give them, but I think that whatever they give them is more than what they had a week ago. And then the whole world is not talking about it, that everybody's just letting it happen. So I don't know. Like when you sent me that link earlier, you said, look, Iran wants paid for before they continue the talks. My response to that message was, what do they think? Obama's still president? Like who's going to pay them for anything? They have gotten the money that they got on the last talks with Obama, and that money they used to do exactly what they did until now. So why would anybody give them a nickel?
Yeah, I don't know. Question got asked, why not come to an agreement? This is operator error. Why not come to an agreement with Taiwan that they move assets such as production of semiconductors to the U.S. until China de-escalates? Good question. I don't think it's that simple. I really don't. I really don't think it's that simple. Should we? Yes. But
I also think Taiwan wouldn't do that because in a way Taiwan will say, if you take away the one thing that the U.S. will really want to protect on that territory is that that process, they're the best and the biggest right now in the world.
Yeah.
So like, if they take that away, the U.S. can just say, oh, well, left China have it because you don't really have that anymore. You moved it here, so we can protect it here. I think Taiwan is not going to do that, and I think that Japan and the United States is really going to step up in that region. Their seriousness. I think you can see it happening. With different committees that have been releasing conferences and stuff and talking about it.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining me this morning. I'm going to go ahead and cut out. I told my sister I'd give her a call about half an hour ago, and I'm way over that. So I want to make sure I'm actually able to give her some time.
Have a good one. Cheers. Thank you.
I appreciate you guys for coming in here.
Have a good one, Matt.
Yeah, everybody, you guys, thank you guys very much. Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen, last thing is last. Before I end up getting off, I told you guys I'm getting back to the daily devotionals, and I wasn't kidding you. So I have a brand new one for you today. If you guys aren't Christian, these are Christian-based devotionals. You guys are welcome to walk away if you would like, or stick around. This daily devotional is called Walking by Faith. The reading from it comes from Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 5. The moment we trust Jesus as Lord and Savior, we enter into a life of faith. In other words, we live by the assurance that God is who he says and will do everything he promises. Salvation is instantaneous, but it takes a lifetime to learn and grow as believers. As soon as we are saved, God begins what is known as sanctification, teaching us to be like him. This is a process. As was true of Abraham, it takes time for us to understand how to walk by faith, trusting in what we cannot see. To grow in godliness, we must learn to listen and to obey our Father. We must choose daily to follow his way, but this is not a neutral tendency, so self-discipline is needed. It is helpful to set a regular time to meditate upon God's word. Eagerly expect Jesus to speak to you and listen to what he is saying. Write notes in your Bible or a journal with the date and what the Lord has impressed upon you. Then apply the truth you learn and observe the results. Hearing God's voice is being in tune with his spirit and vital parts of walking in faith. But these things just don't happen. They require persistence. As with the physical exercise, the more we strengthen our spiritual muscles, the more the process becomes part of who we are. Reading goes along with it. Now the Lord said to Abraham, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and those who curses, I will curse them. And in you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abraham was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Abraham took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out from the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'll see you guys again next time. Peace, love, happiness, and God bless. I, ladies and gentlemen, am out of here.